As Nate mentioned earlier, I'll be continuing with our study in 1 Corinthians. I'll be finishing with chapter 9. Daniel started out there last Sunday, and I'll be continuing with verse 15 on through the rest of the chapter to kind of get us back to where we are. I'm going to go ahead right at the beginning and just read the entirety of chapter 9 to get us up to speed. Starting in verse 1, it says, "Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord? If I am not an apostle to others, yet doubtless I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. My defense to those who examine me is this: do we have no right to eat and drink? Do we have no right to take along a living wife, as do the other apostles, the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working? Whoever goes to war at his own expense, who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit, or who tends a flock and does not drink of the milk of the flock? Do I say these things as a mere man, or does not the law say the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain. Is it oxen God is concerned about, or does he say it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be partaker of his hope. If we have sown spiritual things for you, is it a great thing if we reap your material things? If others are partakers of this right over you, are we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who minister the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel. But I have used none of these things, nor have I written these things, that it should be done so to me. For it would be better for me to die than anyone should make my boasting void. For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have been entrusted with the stewardship. What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win the Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. Everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I preach to others, I myself should become disqualified." As we read, I'm sure you remember quite a bit from Daniel's lesson. Paul's telling the brethren that he, just as other apostles, are complete within their right, and it would be just for them to receive help from the brethren financially, support for their work. Then he then says to them that they have not done so, that they're afraid it would hinder their purpose there. They could achieve the most that they could by not demanding they be afforded the rights that they potentially could be due, and focus solely on spreading the word. And starting with verse 15, where my lesson will be starting this afternoon, it reads, "But I've used none of these things, nor have I written these things, it should be done so to me. For it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void." First, here Paul states that none of these things that he has taken. In the previous verses, Paul listed several liberties that could be expected toward him, or support that he would be well within his right to take. And previously he wrote to make that point, that he and Barnabas have the right to that. But immediately he follows it up by saying that they have not done so, and doesn't want them to think that by him writing this that he is asking for those things. There are some that think it wrong for him to take them and take these things, that he doesn't want to, and by doing so, or come across as he may be wanting them, for them to lay claim that he is doing it to be a preacher for profit and not doing it just to spread the word. And in verse 16, it says, "For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if I preach a reward, but if I do this against my will, I have been entrusted with the stewardship. What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel." And I looked at several commentaries over these verses, and I spoke with Brother Nate. This is not the most challenging of verses, but it's not the most easy, at least for me, to understand what he's specifically being talked about in these few verses. In verse 1, Paul mentions boasting, and there he's speaking on his preaching without receiving financial support. In verse 16, when he's speaking of boasting, he's speaking on something a little different. Here Paul is saying that he cannot boast because of his teaching of the gospel. And he says he cannot because it is laid upon him as out of necessity. Now, just as the rest of the apostles, Paul was called much like them, but it is a little bit different than how the rest were called or how any of us were may be called to be Christians. The Lord specifically tells Ananias in Acts chapter 9, verse 15, that Paul is a chosen vessel, and he will be shown all the things he must suffer for the name of Christ. In Acts chapter 26, we see that Jesus is speaking directly to Paul, telling him that he has come to make him a minister and a witness, and that he is specifically being charged with going to the Gentiles to preach to them, to turn them from darkness to the light. Now, just as we all do, Paul had the ability to accept or deny Christ. He could have just chosen not to do so. But his conversion is slightly different in that the rest of us, when we were baptized, became Christians, it wasn't laid upon us that we all would be evangelists, as Brother Nate is. We are all charged with going throughout the world and preaching the gospel in that manner, where to him it was specifically given that he was chosen for this. He was to go to the Gentiles and preach there. So it's not that he didn't have a choice in the matter. If he had a choice to follow Christ or not, and if he did, his role was to be to do this specific thing. And so when he says he could glory if he was to do so willingly, but Paul says that a dispensation of the gospel had been laid upon him. In verse 16, he says it was, a necessity. But by necessity, he teaches. So he cannot glory in this. He didn't come to the gospel and decide that he was going to go out and evangelize and go teach to the Gentiles. He was given specifically this thing to do, and so he doesn't feel that he can glory in that because it wasn't of his own will that he did so. He was given this specifically, and so to him, he takes that as part of his purpose. That was something that he was instructed to specifically do, and so he cannot glory in the fact that he is doing this. He cannot take where one could take pride in the fact that they do something like that. He doesn't feel it's within his right to do so, because that's a task that was given him by the Lord. Next, in verse 18, Paul tells that his reward is that he may preach the gospel without charge, without accepting any support. He did not want to be seen as being selfish and did not want to take advantage of his position, even though he says that he could do these things and it'd be fine if he were to take some. But he chose to teach the gospel with no support, and this is what he found his joy in. He took his joy from the fact that he could do this, go to the Gentiles and teach the word, but he didn't require anything of them. He supported himself and didn't require them to support him. And after explaining this, Paul, at the first of chapter 9, he mentions that he is a free man, and he picks up kind of that idea again in verse 19. He says, "For though I am free from all men, I made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more." He is a free man, but he's not a slave, but also he's not bound to any specific place. He says he's free, but he made himself a servant to all, he may win the more. If he were to take support from a certain congregation or from multiple congregations, then he may feel that he's bound or obligated to those specific places or those people. By taking no support, he is not obligated towards any one congregation, so he has made himself a slave to all. So if he sees a need, he can go to that place or those people and teach as is needed, and he's not required to be at any specific place because no one is can in any way lay claim to him, that they are supporting him and he should be with them. And this way, he may win, like as he says, he may win the more. His calling is to spread the word to the Gentiles. Next, Paul goes through a brief list of different groups that he made himself a bond slave to and tells us why. First, he says to the Jews, he became as a Jew, and to those who were under the law, as one under the law, as one without law, he became to those who were weak, as one who was weak. He became all things, he says, to all men. And I think that, read through this, this is a mark of someone who thoroughly understands their role and the position that they hold. If you're trying to convince someone or a group that something that they or their family has thought for years, generations, or something their society that's held as a standard, you're going to try to convince them that they're wrong and turn them from a certain way, the best option is not always just to walk up to them and start giving them a list of all the things they've done wrong or all the things they should change to. And Paul understood that he had to know about these people and he had to be accepted by them for them to be able to listen to him and to lend them their ear, I believe. Now he didn't, as he says here, when he to the Jews he became as Jew, he didn't become a Jew, he didn't convert to Judaism that he could, you know, get in with them and become friends, but he became as a Jew. And the same he did with those who were without law or those who were under the law. When he speaks of Jews, he's speaking here, I believe, of the Jewish nation in general. And he says those who are under the law, those who were under the old law, those who are weak. Mentions here the same ones that we read about earlier in chapter 8, where those who had a issue with eating meat that was offered to idols, these were the ones that they were weak and they thought this was a sin. And to those people, he, even though he might not believe the same thing, he practiced those same things there. Didn't go against anything that Jesus had taught for him to do so. So in this way, he was able to become closer with them. He became as much like them as he could without... I'm trying to find the right way to say this. It wasn't like, you know, if we come to church on Sundays, but during the week we won't be with the rest of the world, we try to walk that line. He wasn't walking any line. He was doing everything he could possibly do as a Christian. But it's the same, it says those without law, these would be the Gentiles he was speaking to. And we have friends and family who are out in the world, they're not Christians, and that doesn't mean that we don't spend time with them or have, you know, maybe go out to eat with them or go to their homes or spend time with them. There are things that we can do with them that don't, you know, disqualify us from being Christians, as long as we don't allow them to influence us in a way that we would act or do or be anywhere that a Christian shouldn't be. And I believe that's what is being showed here, that Paul did what he could to become friends with these people. His job was to preach to them and spread the word, and the best way he, it seems, knew to do that was to show them some common ground that they had, to show them that they what things they had in common and get to know them, and then be able to preach the gospel once he got his foot in the door, so to speak. It says he became all things to all men that he may save some. So he did all these things for the gospel's sake, that the more people he could come in contact with, the more people that would accept him and listen to him, the more he could potentially save. And I think this is a impressive thing in a world where so many people, and I know I am from time to time, that a lot of times we think things are all about us. We seem to be somewhat entitled at times, that this is a great example of how we should approach those who we're speaking to, and not that we should be accepting of any lifestyles. The Bible condemns many lifestyles and different things, but as far as our approach when we talk to those, if it's someone that's blatantly living in sin, whether they realize it or not, and we know they are, we should still come from a place of love and understanding to that. You know, if we come across crude and arrogant towards them, it's not going to do us any good. Now, Paul wasn't afraid to tell it like it was, but I believe he understood that at times you needed to get to know, as he did here, how people believed culturally or spiritually, and try to find some common ground there so it'd be easier to spread the gospel. And I believe that we could learn something from that we may as well gain the more. Starting in verse 24, it reads, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things." From what I've read that's put forth by historians, at this time, they had the Isthmian Games. It's similar to our Olympics in present day, except then they did it every 3 years. And so this is, once again, he's taking something that was held near Corinth. So he's taking something that the people he's speaking to here would be familiar with, and he's taking that and turning it into an example that they can familiarize themselves with, and that with, and they'll be able to understand. And to be able to even compete, to be accepted to compete in this, you had to be able to show proof that you were Greek, you had to have documentation, you were a Greek, not only Greek, but you were a free man. You had to be able to show that you had undergone specific training for a specific length of time before the games even took place. It was very, very strict, and it was a very great honor to even be accepted into this race. And one would certainly have to train in very rigorous conditions and sacrifice many things in hope to just not only to be able to compete, but to be able to win. Whether they had to sacrifice certain, physical indulgences or being around certain people that may distract them from their goal, they had to be very strict on themselves in order to do this. And it was a very great honor at the time if you were to win in these games. And after speaking on the liberties earlier, and that how he gave up a lot of those so he may better spread the gospel, and he gives this example of a runner in who was given everything that they had to be able to dedicate themselves to the mastery of this craft and to winning the race. He's looking to encourage the reader, Paul is here, to work hard and be ready when it's time for our trial, and we must show the fruits of our race, that we must be beforehand, be dedicated and be focused, that we may persevere. Paul says that one who seeks mastery is temperate in all things. Those who strive or compete must be temperate in all things and have self-control over themselves in all aspects of their life. And unlike an athlete who trains for a specific race every 3 or 4 years, we ourselves are trained for a time that we don't know when it may come. Obviously, a runner seeks after a physical award and the praise of men, but we're competing in a race that we don't know when the finish line will come upon us, and we're seeking an incorruptible crown and the acceptance of not our fellow men, but of our Father in heaven. He says, "Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. Lest when I preach to others, I myself should become disqualified." Paul here giving himself as an example, showing that we're not to do this blindly and without purpose. We're to be certain of what we're doing as the race we're running, to realize that what is at stake and what our purpose is. Also, in these games, apparently there was a boxing element to these games. And in a similar way, we're not to go about our lives not trained. It says, as one who beats the air, we're to train. And the beats the air gives the idea here of one who just flails haphazardly and doesn't really understand what's going on, just hopes something good's going to happen. This idea of someone who just reads the Bible, maybe semi-regularly, not very often, who studies every once in a while, or a boxer who occasionally punches a punching bag or may spar here and there, but it's not really training that hard. And doing this for the boxer in this time, you would never even be accepted into the race, much less have a chance of winning. And that's something that Paul's trying to get across here, is that it's not something we can do lightheartedly. This is something that we're to put our entire lives into, and everything should be focused around that and for trying to obtain this prize. Now, Paul's told by Jesus that he would face many hardships, so it's probably also here referring to the hard times that he himself has faced by refusing to accept any financial support from them. There are many different views on what Paul means when he mentions that he may personally become disqualified, but keeping the passage in context, I believe he's still speaking of the brethren, that they saw him, if they saw him receiving any type of support, it would make Paul look like to them that he was doing it just for the money. And that's how they would perceive it, and that's how they would tell others. And by doing that, it would undermine everything that he was doing and cause me to turn away. So Paul himself brings his body into subjection, and he deals with the hardships that he has to deal with in that way in order that he may be the good steward that he has been instructed to be. Those are my thoughts this afternoon. I hope it was edifying in some way. I'm not the most eloquent speaker, but I hope what I had to say was helpful in us understanding these passages as we go through 1 Corinthians. We never want to end without offering the invitation. If anyone has any wrongs that he make right, come, we could pray for you. If anyone's not obeyed the gospel, but you would like to do so at this time, you may come and we can assist you in that as well while we stand and while we sing.